Good evening, and welcome to a Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White. I am really excited to welcome back Dane Alexander tonight for part two of our interview on his book, Maya. From our previous interview, some of you may know that he trained in a number of esoteric circles and has a unique understanding of the dangerous political and climatic course upon which our planet is proceeding. And those experiences prompted the writing of an astounding new book simply called Maya. So it's my great pleasure to welcome back Dane Alexander. Hello, Dane.
Hi, Lance.
Well, I promise you, I'm glad you came back, and this time we won't keep you 2+ hours on air, but we'll keep to an hour this time. How's that?
That's fine.
Okay. How have you been since we last spoke?
Really busy. Things are exploding. You know, the movie is getting going, and everything is happening almost all simultaneously. It's like I'm traveling at Mach 4.
Oh, good. Well, that's good, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, and then there's Mach 5, and, you know, who knows?
I don't want to go there yet, Lance.
Huh?
I don't want to go there yet.
Okay. I wanted to find out a little bit more about some other subjects that you probably are very well aware of. And we didn't delve into this the last time, but you have a great deal of experience as a financial insider, don't you?
Yes, I was registered financial advisor for quite a few years.
I was wondering if you could give us your take on a financial, from the financial side of what's looming on the horizon. In other words, I follow this kind of loosely. I don't follow it real closely because you can't really do that. But my feeling is that this is connected to your book, that there is some kind of financial meltdown looming on the horizon. What's your take on that?
That's right. In fact, we have one toe in the bathtub right now. There were the largest number of housing drops just recently that there have been over in the past 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
Often people, when they see calamity coming, they go into gold. Well, I had a gold trading company for many, many years among other type of assets. And I had offices an office in Belgium and Canada and New York and all over.
Wow.
And so I'm rather versed in it. In fact, when 9/11 happened, I was interviewed solely for an hour and a half by one syndication from Guam to New York talking about where the world economy was going based upon terrorism.
Uh-huh.
And so when you talk about gold right now should be up at $2,000 an ounce.
Wow.
And it's up in the 580 range. It's not going to be the medium of exchange that people are buying into.
Right.
And I would really shy away from that. As far as real estate, the plug is being pulled. It just hasn't drained the bathtub yet. 2007, 2008, I don't even want to talk to you about 2009. What you see right now in the world of economics,
mm-hmm.
total smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Total. It is just about ready to have $4 a gallon gas up to $6 a gallon gas, then ultimately the price of oil will stabilize at about $130 to $135 a barrel,
wow.
with gas being $7 to $8 a gallon.
Wow. So tell me if I'm mistaken in even thinking this, but does it seem like the gas has been artificially lowered just in time for these November elections?
It would appear that way.
Yeah.
But back a couple of months when the gas really, really went high, and then a certain political faction, we'll call the Democrats, I'll call it like it is,
yeah.
came out and started applying pressure. Within 24 hours, the gas oil prices, the oil prices dropped, I don't know how much, $5 a barrel or something like that. It was a huge amount. And they said, you know, we just found $2 billion or 2 billion barrels of oil we didn't know we had.
Yeah, right.
And it was based upon political pressure. If you will go into a current group of Washingtonians,
mm-hmm.
and I get to this quite a bit in the book, and actually study who has in-depth oil and gas holdings,
mm-hmm.
This whole thing is being orchestrated on that level for that reason.
Well, I think I won't mention any names, but I think it's pretty common knowledge who has extensive gas holdings.
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of them, though.
Yeah, but there are a whole bunch of them.
And, oh, yes.
And also, you know, I've heard a lot about the global corporate elite. Do you know about this? Is there really a core group of globalists that are you know, heads of corporations that are really, really pulling the strings?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, let me describe it. Did you ever watch Star Trek in the not the beginning series, but a little later on when they had that multi-tiered chess game?
Yes.
Okay. This whole thing is like that. On one level, let's say you have Washington on one chessboard, and they don't know that there is a group of players, another chessboard that affects all of their moves.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, that group doesn't know there's a group above them and above them. And this, as I say in the book, it goes into all of the groups way up to the final end group or aspect that controls this whole thing. So this is being controlled by an international global consortium, but they're being controlled by others.
Do you have any indications or clues about who those others might be?
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us about that?
At this point in time, I think I would have to craft my answer a little more carefully.
Yes, I would think so.
Because, of course I can.
We want you to stay alive.
No, I've already had those threats against me.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I had somebody from the military intelligence who was, that's the equivalent of the CIA. He was in the MI, and he called me very, very excitedly because he'd been doing some of the proofing, formatting of the book.
Oh, neat.
And he said, Dane, he called me five times that day. He was rather up high in the MI. And I said, why are you so excited? And he said, well, you know, because he owns a publishing company and quite a few other things at this stage in his life. And he said, very strange things are afoot. And I said, he said to me, do you remember the horse's head in the Godfather? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you've just had a horse's head in your bed. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, when I tried to send the file off to your printer, I couldn't pull up the printer's email address. And I said, well, so what? And he said, well, I have a Mac. I said, well, okay, you know, I'm not that computer conversant. And he said, well, then I tried to pull up the printer's phone number on a different file, and that had vanished too. Everything else in the files was the same. But then he said, then my FTP file was missing. And he said, but the fait accompli, he said, somebody had gotten in and really messed around with your manuscript and did nothing else, all the other manuscripts and everything else that I have. He said, they were just firing a shot across your bow.
Yeah.
But he said, watch your back. But
wow.
This is just one of the very small things. I could get into some other things some other time.
Yes. So then, who would you say, okay, let's take it to the step beyond the global corporate levels. I know that they're probably, you know, tiers above them, layers above them. Let's go to one up above the corporate level.
Well, then you talk about the ruling families of the world.
Okay.
And there are a group of them. Their exact number keeps fluctuating depending upon what source that I use. But you remember the global tunnel complex that I talk about in the book?
Yes, I do. That was really fascinating stuff.
Well, this is real. You see, the book is written as fiction only to get it out there. But so much of this stuff you can verify. And did we talk about the global tunnel situation in the earlier segment? Okay, well, I just want to mention that I know of somebody who's actually been in them.
Wow.
Or I know somebody whose best friend, pardon me, I have to clarify that, who's
okay.
actually been in them, and it was an underground city. This whole thing is connected.
Wow. And, of course, you've also mentioned that this is common knowledge that Cheney, at his house in Washington, has had bomb blasts, you know, going for weeks and months, building some kind of underground tunnel there.
Well, okay. Now, this is not verified.
Is
what
not.
Happened was, the way the information has come through very reliable sources, is that there was a tremendous amount of 24/7 underground blasts in that neighborhood, and especially under his house, with major trucks moving back and forth and moving dirt and on, while the Cheneys were not there for a period of time. And but the whole of the world, but definitely all of America, is absolutely riddled with these tunnels.
Wow!
In fact, when during the summer. You know, it was the day in which we felt, but there was a lot of talk about perhaps the Iranians were going to set off a major nuclear blast for about several days before and several days after that very propitious date. Most of Washington was in hiding in one of the main underground bunkers.
Wow.
because they actually took it for a possible real attack.
My goodness. You know, one of the most harrowing things that I've read in a long time is about these underground tunnels, and I think this one in particular is located under the Denver airport. I'm not sure, but they talk about, you know, various levels that keep going down, and they're actual aliens or extraterrestrials working in those tunnels with all kinds of you know, human bodies and experiments and cloning, and I mean all kinds of bizarre stuff. And of course, you know, that's not something that one can validate very easily, but have you heard that?
Oh yeah, and up here at the Four Corners area, in fact, which the aliens were taking, apparently, from what I understand, too much of their experimentation quota, and so we sent in a Delta Force or two, and there was a big fight, and they since subsequently moved that. But forgetting the aliens and the tunnel aspect momentarily, it is a fact that the CIA has moved its primary headquarters from Langley, where it's always been, to Denver. Much of the IRS has moved its main headquarters, and many of the Washingtonian main administration aspects have moved the main port of the administration now to Denver. You have to ask yourself why. What do they know is going to happen in Washington that they don't want to be in Washington? And number two,
yes,
the concept of tunnels being under Denver then become more probable.
Yes. What, you know, I've heard that the government is very well aware, very well apprised that there is some kind of global shift coming. And I'm talking about the Earth changes, possibly a pole shift, and that NASA and all the rest of them are quite aware of this, and that information is being kept from us. What's your take on that one?
You have all of these natural disasters looming up, and they're all vectoring in almost at the same time. Now, the program on PBS last week did an hour program on the magnetic shift of the inner core of the Earth,
yeah,
and how that is not might make a flip. It's yes, it will make a flip when, and we're way overdue, and a lot of the shifting of the North Pole and everything else is happening very rapidly right now. So it could be rather imminent. But you have all the other things. You have, as it spells out in the book, you have the Ice Age, which really is kind of strange because we're talking in terms of global warming. But you have a coming major Ice Age like we had, not from 535 AD on up to 1850, that was a mini ice age. I'm talking the real heavy duty, where Washington or New York is 1 mile under ice type ice age that occurred 11,500 years ago. That's coming in about the next 10 years, unless it's changed. And the book will show you how to do that.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that, because one of the guys that you mentioned in the book, Art Bell, wrote a book with Whitley Strieber about that subject, and it was made into a major motion picture, and it was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was precisely about that subject.
Well, it was called The Day After, I believe. I haven't seen it, and the book and the quickening and all of that, but, you know, he has, like you and many others that are pointing out these things are coming down, that he's performing a very valuable service.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a big fan of Art and George Nuri and Whitley as well.
But, you know, if I might jump in and just mention this, pointing out the problems, it's like all of these political expose books or all the expose books about the climatic problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's half of it, and that's very good to know, because you need to know what the problems are, but then you need to know what the solution is. And politics by itself is not solving it, and science by itself is not solving it.
No.
They're saying global warming could be solved by the year 2065. The way it's going, we're not going to be here in 2065.
Right. I see that the turnaround is really not very likely given our present track, and that basically all that we have left is a spiritual solution.
Yeah,
but you want to elaborate on that, about that in your book?
Well, you know, I quote in the book, and I'm just going to use this person as an example, because most of us have heard of him, and some of us even know the quote. When everybody was surrounding Jesus saying, "You're the Son of God," he said, "Wait a minute." He said, "All the miracles I've done, these things, and greater shall they," meaning modern man, "also do." Now, there are only three ways you can look at that, Lance. You can say, well, somebody came along years after and just kind of hyped that up, which part of the Bible was written quite a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Or number two, he said, you know, I need to give all these people some hope. They're never going to be able to do this, but I had a give him some hope. And so he outright lied. Or number three, he remote viewed, saw the future, and saw that this technique is going to be reintroduced. And that's, you see, this is a big mistake. People are thinking they're buying a book for $24.95. They're not. This, imagine on a table in front of you a box, and in that box it has a secret code that does one, teach you teleportation, levitation, making things appear out of thin air, all those things that Jesus did. That's one. Number two, it's the fastest path to total illumination, to cosmic consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's also in that box. Number three, though, is really the important thing, I think. It will show a handful of people around the world how to turn this whole thing around and save the entire planet, and it can happen, and I've even heard this cosmically, in a twinkling of an eye. So even though it seems like they're advancing, things are going to get really bad, all that can be flipped. So in this, what seems to be a book, it's not a book. It's an ancient hidden code written in the disguise of a book, and that's what this is all about.
Do you think people can get that intuitively, or do they have to dig to get it? And how clear is that message, or is it kind of like the Da Vinci Code, where there's a mystery, and it's some of it unfolds at certain times?
Okay, the message to me is really clear, but it depends. You know, some people are really spiritually advanced, but not supposed to be getting the message as of this month, and it might come to them next month. Everybody is going to get the message now and then. But even though you solve the code, here's the situation. It doesn't mean you're automatically going to instantly be doing these things.
Mm.
And the reason for that, this is like, it seems like walking a tightrope. We all know walking a tightrope is very simple. You simply put one foot in front of the other.
Mm.
And yet we all know it's a little more difficult than that.
Yes.
So once you solve the code, there's the practicing of it. And you may not even think you're making any progress until all of a sudden it's required and boom, it happens. The first time it happened to me, and nothing had happened up to that, but I'd been working with it.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, gee, this is not working. But I had a great amount of pain, and all of a sudden, whoosh, a demonstration happened. One time later, I was under great fear because somebody was trying to kill myself and my wife.
Hmm.
And that caused me a little bit of consternation because I could die, but don't let her die. And then it happened. But later on, they start coming without any effort at all. You don't have to be under fear or under pain. And I don't want to plant that in anybody's mind that you have to have fear or pain in the beginning to get this thing going. No, that's not true. Don't think that. It can come very naturally immediately. But what I'm trying to say is once you have the code and you put one foot in front of the other, nothing seems to happen. It will happen when it's supposed to. Don't worry about it.
Hmm. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, that's also what I think about it. So very good. I guess, you know, the book is really timely right now, and is that because of the climate and the politics that we were just talking about?
Oh, there's so much happening in the climate and the politics that you never hear about. The book talks in terms of so much fact.
Yeah.
As an example, in the middle 1980s, there were 53 corporations controlling all the news in America. Now it's only five, and all these five are in lockstep agreement. You don't hear about things. Let me give you two examples that should shock you to your core.
Okay.
All right. And some of you have heard about this, but the majority of you will not have heard about this. Have you heard about the habeas corpus bill that just passed?
Oh, yes.
Okay, let me kind of go into that for some of the audience.
Please do. This is important stuff, people.
This is major.
Yes.
This is really big.
Yes.
Since the Magna Carta, I believe 980 years ago or so, I don't know, I'm not that great a historian, but there has been, at that time and all throughout this country's history, when you were accused of a crime, you had two things that you could count on. Number one, you knew what you were accused of. Like, what am I charged with? Okay, you had that as a law. Okay, and number two, you had the right sometime to make an appearance in court, face your accusers and prove and say that's not right. What this law has been, it's been passed through the House, through the Senate, and it's been ratified by the President, that no longer do you have to have any charges be brought against you, and you will never have to be brought before a judge. If they in any way determine they don't like your looks, or they're going to call you an enemy of the state.
Yes.
Okay. Let's say you show up at a rally wearing the wrong T-shirt.
That's happened already.
yeah, those people have gotten beaten up. Let's say you have a T-shirt with a little bush on it and a circle around it and kind of a bar through that circle. you could disappear forever. Now, that sounds far-fetched. The law is there. They may not be enacting it today, but certain things are afoot.
Yes.
Now, your lawyer is going to try and find you, and he's going to say, well, you know, what's happening, everything else. That lawyer is going to be charged with the same crime that you have. You have no rights to go to any of your lawyers. You have no ability to draw on any of your assets to defend yourself. You have no defense. You just go down in that hole and you're gone, period. And that's the way it is done. No longer do you have those rights. Now, let me tell you one other thing that most people aren't aware of.
Okay.
When the whales and the sea, the whales and the porpoises were being beached and hemorrhaging internally and bleeding and dying and everything else, the military said, you know, this is interesting. We might be able to do something with this. And so they developed a microwave weapon. And one of the acronyms of it's POP, P-O-P, but there's some other acronyms. You can do some research. And what they do is they tried it out in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they send this microwave frequency. Now, we all know what happens when you microwave an egg or an apple or anything. It fries it. Well, they send this beam into a crowd of protesters. So this is, I'm telling you, all of you are going to show up at protests very soon will probably likely be microwaved without you knowing it, and it'll do several things. Number one, they don't have the frequency right. So at this point in time, in some cases it lobotomizes people.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases they get the frequency a little wrong and it makes people very irritated and wanting to fight. So
mm-hmm.
what they're doing is not sending out one frequency, they're experimenting out sending several.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard of two instances here in America while this has already been put in use on a crowd just to see how it would work.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these things where, well, let me give an example, and I can name a very famous contracting firm whose name is almost household anymore. They got a $380 million no-bid contract to build retention centers in America. Now, we used to call them concentration camps.
Right.
But that is, they are being built. Now, why would that being built? Well, if society falls apart, and I'm saying if, it is and will, for those that don't have the code or, you know, can't work with it, when Hitler came to power, the first people they surrounded were the communists and brought those in. The second people were like the listeners of this program. They were the metaphysicians,
mm-hmm.
the people who were on a spiritual path. Then they went to the gypsies and the Jews and the people who were crippled and mentally had problems and so on and so forth. Metaphysicians people were really high on the list because you represent a real, real threat. So this is why it's important that people get this book now. It's, as I say, not a book. It's a code. It's a map. It's a teaching instrument. And, by the way, it'll be in Barnes & Noble probably in the next 2 weeks to a month. There was a little mistake by the distributor, and that's all gotten straightened. So it could even be there. Perhaps I got an email from Barnes & Noble today within the next 48 hours. I don't know. But simply go online and get the thing.
Yeah, and I put up a link in if people pull up the program for today. I'll leave it up until, you know, into the beginning of the week. And there is the information on the book and how it, and there's even a link to Amazon.com if you'd like to, you know, order it there. So.
Now, if I can stop right there, if I might.
Yes.
Because I've gone to a new distributor, Amazon is being dropped momentarily.
Okay.
So just have them go to my website, which is www.itsmaya, that's itsmaya.com, itsmaya.com. And you can get it there or rather shortly at Barnes & Noble.
Wonderful.
But you'll have to put your order at the Barnes & Noble. They'll have to order it, and it'll be several weeks until they get it. So one way or the other.
Okay. So we were talking about this microwave weaponry. You know, it's funny you should mention that because since our last chat, I discovered that it's being used in Iraq as well. And some of the men were found they had left, they had been microwaved, cross-microwaved. Now, they set it up, there were a couple of them set up at different points, and they found that if they cross these microwave beams, they can really zap people. And, of course, our soldiers are getting caught in the crossfire, maybe even intentionally. I can just imagine. You know, well, let's see what this does, you know. And they wandered off and came back days later not knowing who they were or where they had been or anything. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit more of that coming up in the near future, too.
It is. And that's why I said I've heard of two situations back east where it's already been applied just to see how it worked. But The original purpose of it was as a assassination tool.
Oh, yeah.
They were trying to specifically key in on certain insurgents, but the problem is it comes out in a sort of a circular pattern, and that's why they accidentally got some of the sentries, and they were sort of included, although they were pointing over here, it went over there, and the sentries just wandered off for like 4 days at a time.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, if this starts happening in crowds, and there will be... You know, I don't think it's any secret. There's going to be problems coming up where people will be getting together in groups, and this is the kind of thing that's called, you know, they call it crowd control.
Let me share something with you.
Yeah, please.
Every time you go to a particular group, I was talked to go into something on UFOs about a year ago, which I normally don't do that. I mean, I've had Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, which are mostly in, or a lot are in the book, but it's not of interest to me. But there were about 11 people in the audience taking names and notes and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But some friends of mine just recently had a little party. There were some metaphysicians, kind of low-key, nothing very big.
Mm-hmm.
About 20 people showed up. I wasn't there. And they said, Dane, I said, what? And they said, somebody was there, kind of like a party-goer, you know, taking pictures of everybody and license plates and everybody else. And I said, well, who was it? And they said, nobody knows. We didn't invite him, and as soon as he got his pictures, he left.
Uh-oh.
This is what's happening even in small, personal parties at houses now.
Wow.
Let alone your major rallies where you show up in your car is photographed and all of that sort of thing. Now, with your art, and it gets in really into how it works, with the computer chip that you'll pretty soon need to use to buy or sell, unless you can actually manifest things using this code that's in the book, and your RFID tags, you'll be going down the road. They will know exactly where you are, what you bought, where you've been, what you've called on your cell phone. Everything is going, and then there'll be the cameras on the street, which are already coming about.
They are coming about, yes.
I mean, in London right now, or in most of England, in the urban cities, the average person is on camera 300 times in one day.
Jesus.
Now, that's happening here in America. They're doing it under the auspices of, well, we need to watch the kids with graffiti. We also need to watch for terrorists and so on and so forth. This is all just kind of a surface, way below the surface. It's everything is being put in place.
Well, you know, not only that, but they're coming up with this facial recognition stuff over here, you know, where they're actually going to observe in airports, you know, people's facial configuration to see if there's something that's different. So, you know, you won't be able to even wrinkle your face or smile or look a certain way. Everybody's going to be so paranoid they won't know what to do.
That's right. And you have to be careful what you say on the telephone, because nearly everything is going, well, everything is recorded now, but when you say certain keywords, it's all triggered in, analyzed by a major gray computer, and then it's pulled aside saying, this person is a potential threat, and then by this habeas corpus law, you disappear.
Yes. Well, plus, wasn't that habeas corpus law, didn't that come into effect at a time when they also approved the new rules for detainees abroad? They're allowed to do waterboarding and all kinds of torture things. And
No. You have to understand, they're waterboarding, but waterboarding in their definition is not torture.
Oh.
You can put saran wrap around a person's head so they can't breathe, and that's not torture. Or you can hold them underwater for so long until they pass out. That's not torture.
Oh, okay.
You have to watch your terminology, because you might think it's torture, and I might, but by the definition of everyone else, it's not torture.
Huh. Well, you know, it just strikes me that if they were to get confessions under the duress, that they wouldn't be very, you know, where's the accuracy of the information then? You've got people confessing to things that they never did. I guess that's the point of it, huh?
Yeah. The information that's been stated many, many times by those interrogators is extremely unreliable. Almost none of it's true. I mean, you'll say, if somebody hurts you enough, you're going to say anything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, they could pinch me and I'd say anything. So... Yeah, I mean, I just say that because it's important for all of us to not get too frightened out of our wits either. But these are very real things that are going on, and this is just the merest tip of the iceberg. And your book covers a great deal of this.
Well, in the ensuing we'll get into it much further. But, you know, I was going to go to a movie the other day, and somebody said, I don't want to go see that because it's just, it's too much.
Yeah.
All right. Do not, and let's back up here. Do not wallow in fear. That's going to be the great inhibitor. But
yeah.
You need to keep your eyes wide open so you know what to anticipate. One, and I will give you a portion of the clue to the code. In being able to activate it once you get the code, rather, is you need to get rid of fear.
Yeah.
Because if you're in fear, nothing seems to happen. But there are ways in which to do this, and if we don't get it through the book, I'm going to come out with other books and seminars and so on and so forth, because everybody that's tuning in is going to get it.
Oh, wonderful. You know, I really wish all light workers around the world would just get your darn book and start using it. It's really great.
Actually, you know, the strange thing about it is that not very many people in the world will have to get it to make the whole thing change. However, and I'm not trying to make you feel good, everybody in the audience, or make you patronize you. But
go ahead.
But you are the very, very few that can do this. Think of it like a humanity, like a tapestry, and you're just one thread, but you're the only thread that can make this happen because you think out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
You may not buy what I'm saying, and I don't expect you to, but you're saying, I'm going to get the book, I'm going to examine this code, and I'm going to see if it works, and if it does work, I'll apply it. People outside the box cannot do this. Scientists, as an example, say, well, prayer does not exist, miracles don't exist because we cannot replicate them in the laboratory. And yet most of us have had a prayer or two answered. Most of us have had many miracles answered and so on and so forth. And yet science says no. So are scientists going to get this?
Probably not.
No way.
Unless they're working on quantum physics and are involved with what the bleep.
No. Strange that you should mention that.
Okay.
I went to one of those very, very famous people who is in quantum physics and did what the bleep. And I said, you are a metaphysician. You have done all of these things. I would like perhaps you to read this and give your review. Can't do it. Why? It's too far out. I'm saying based upon everything you know and done. You see, what happens with scientists is they put themselves in a little box.
Yeah.
Like Einstein. Once he got through E equals MC squared,
yeah.
He never did anything great after that.
Not really.
No, because he got into the box and he fought about proving that theory rather than saying, okay, if something is better, I'm going to chuck that theory out and go.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking, I don't agree with a lot of what he does. But I admire the man because he will sometimes reverse gears 180 degrees and say, you know, I said that, I believed it, I'm wrong, it's this way. And so this is the group that we're talking to tonight. This is the group that says, well, I've always thought gravity existed. And I'm saying, no, it doesn't. You believe it existed, and there's a way in which you can get past gravity. Oh, really? Yeah, you can fly, you can go through walls, you can go, really? But prove it. Well, you have to do it. I can't do it for you, but there's the code. You can do it.
You mentioned something that, you touched on something that I really wanted to get into a little bit more. You mentioned about UFOs, and a number of the alien encounters in the book seem so realistic. For instance, there's one that occurs near the Deer Valley Airport, and it's quite frightening, really. Can you tell us a little bit more about those experiences?
Well, okay. Number one, are there aliens? You bet. They're all over the place, and many, many different forms and shapes. And a lot of my experiences are based upon encounters of the fifth kind, not just the third and the fourth. But, okay. That, and a dime doesn't really buy you a cup of coffee. Well, people tend to rely upon aliens to take them off the planet when things get really bad, or for some type of
salvation of some sort.
The rapture. There we go.
Right.
Which is not even in the Bible, but okay. And no, the aliens have held this thing together, but it's now about time for us to take our own test. It's finally, you know, they've been doing a little bit of the pop-up quizzes for us, but now it's getting time for the finals, and we have to do it ourselves. It doesn't mean that they won't help, and that they are helping and will, you know, continue. But at the Deer Valley Airport, and I won't spoil this for everybody. I mean, I'll tell you what happened, but it won't spoil the book for you, because the book is supposedly fiction, but I had to write it that way to get a lot of the slander and liability laws behind me.
Right, and there's a lot in there, too.
This being and I were traveling along in Phoenix at the time, August evening, just about dusk, and the being said, look up, what is that? And I said, it's a helicopter. And he said, no, it's not a helicopter, it's one of our ships. I'm being telepathed that they want to meet us. And I said, well, it looks like a helicopter to me. And I really have forgotten whether that being said, you know, they've either shape-shifted the craft or they've just put down a hypnotic imprint, which they can do both. Okay. And so I got all excited. You know, I was going to meet the family and, you know, forgetting that an alien sitting next to me. You know, I have to tell you, nearly everybody listening is smarter than I am. So
I doubt it.
No, well, trust me. Here I'm going like, oh, I'm going to meet a group. Well, you got one right here. But anyway. So we just kind of zigged and zagged, and every time there was a stoplight, the helicopter would stop, you know, and wait until the light turned green, and we would go. And we got up to a mile or half a mile south of the Deer Valley Airport. It's now a housing development, and it was way in a very desolate, kind of isolated place, and by that time it was night, and we parked the car and walked, I don't know, 50 yards or so away from it. And the craft had landed over a rolling hill, a berm, and it was really interesting because there was a flashing red light on the top of the craft. And I, at earlier point, had asked why lights on crafts, and it was told that because when they fly over cities real low at night, people think they're just small aircraft, so it looks good, and they don't pay any attention. Of course, they can go visible and invisible, too. That's another story. But so this had a flashing red light on top, and just right over the top, it looked kind of like a little maraschino cherry. And we're walking toward it, and I'm all excited. And the thing was that there was this howl, growl. All I can compare it to is like the Hound of the Baskervilles. I don't know what was coming toward us, except I knew it was going to rip our throats out. I knew that. I could hear it crashing through the sagebrush and everything else.
Wow.
And we turned around and just ripped back to the car.
Wow.
And if you read it, it looks like, well, a little fictional sequence here. Well, no, actually, it really happened exactly that way.
Wow.
So, you know, but here again, aliens are like people living in Istanbul to me.
Uh-huh.
Now, we know people live in Istanbul.
Right.
We've even been there, but it's hard for us to kind of relate, but we know they're there. Well, just the aliens are there, and we're here, and, you know, we go back and forth, and it's no big thing.
Well, one thing I know that I'm curious about, and I keep hearing about, and David Icke has started getting on his box again about this subject, and a few others have as well. Are reptilians real?
You bet.
I was afraid you'd say that.
You noticed I even lowered my voice when I said that.
Yes. Don't tell anybody.
And they're not nice.
I wondered about that.
They're not nice.
I wondered about that. Does it seem that there are some of the negative entities in control of things?
You talked earlier about the different levels.
Yes.
Then you have a situation where then you have the families running the earth.
Right.
And then above that you have the aliens, two factions of aliens, trying to help the earth and one trying to run the earth. Rule the earth, as well as a lot of other areas and dimensions and so on and so forth. And then you have a level above that as well. So, yeah, you have some really nice ones out there. You've got some really nasty ones. And how many are there? In this galaxy alone, I have heard 487 or so, roughly. I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, I know we hear more and more about different, you know, the praying mantis people and this and that. So, you know, it's kind of working into the consciousness of the planet. So let's get back to the those that rule. I heard a show recently that talked about something relating to Zechariah Sitchin's work and the Sumerian tablets and the Anunnaki having been here to, and that they're either coming back or that they are here. Is the Anunnaki part of this configuration, or?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Actually, Zechariah Sitchin is pretty well on point, except he doesn't go back far enough in time.
Okay.
And what this book does, it goes back to the very, very beginning.
Uh-huh.
There is a chapter in there called Pre-Genesis, and for those with an open mind, it will actually give you another chapter to the Bible. And it's an entire movie unto itself. The whole book is one movie, and then that chapter right there is another movie. And it'll tell you exactly where aliens are from, how they came about, who you are, where you're going.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I should say it was channeled, by the way.
Yes. And that way, if you don't like the channel, you can always change it.
Zany mystic indeed. I like that.
I have my moments. This is another subject I wanted to ask you about is the future. I know that we've talked about what's going on today, and we can see the direction of, you know, there's kind of a totalitarian element that seems to be running its thread through society. What about the near future for the President of the United States? Will we retain a two-party system, which is actually just a one-party system? Will the people wake up? What's going to happen?
You know, I haven't really looked into the future for that.
Oh.
And I can give you my beliefs based upon a lot of sound evidence. I just haven't remote viewed and taken a look at it.
Okay.
I do believe you're going to get into a one-party system at one point in time and an attempt at one world government. But all of that's going to reverse itself.
Mm-hmm.
Mankind will continue. It's going to be some very, very rocky times. And yet, the people that have this, let's give an example. Let's assume that there's no electricity. Well,
okay.
No electricity, the water doesn't flow because the pumping station won't bring water to your house. You can't flush the toilet, but that's not the worst of it. You can't go to the gas station and get gas because the pumps aren't running. And even if you got down to the grocery store, you'd find that they're looted.
Yeah.
Forgetting that the cash register won't work.
Yeah.
So what you're given here is a secret method by which to make these things appear out of air when you want them to, and also teleport when you want to. Now, that sounds far-fetched. Most of us have cars and travel by car because we believe we have to. There have been times I've teleported. I don't do it every time I would like to, but I do know that people, I know of people that do.
Huh.
But it's and they'll also take others along with them too. So it's not like, you know, it's a onesie type thing. You can have a whole group go here and be there, whatever.
Wow.
But, you know, we can get past this. Just try the code, work the process, and when you need to teleport, and if somebody's holding a gun to your head, all of a sudden you'll be over there.
Well, that would be a handy trick. I'd love to be able to. I've always thought I could do that.
You can.
You know, but the beliefs that this is a solid matter, you know, that I believe that, you know, if I knew how, I could walk through walls. Because there's no wall there, really. It's, when you break the atoms down, there's just empty space.
Well, that's true, and that's one way of doing it. And that's what's called a manipulation of matter. What you do is you attune your vibration to that of the wall and you slide through it.
Mm.
That is mentioned in the book, and it talks about how to do that.
Mm.
I've just told you, but there is a higher way. And once you solve the code, then you know the higher way.
I'm going to have to reread it.
Well, actually, most people have to read it roughly 5 times.
Yeah, I think so. And you know what's really cool about this book is it's a fun read. I mean, it sounds, all of this sounds so serious, and well, you know, it's not that serious, but it's out there. It's outside the box. But the book is really, and it's an exciting journey, and it's a fun story. I mean, it works on that level very nicely. You know, so even if you don't get it, and I'm not sure I got it the first time, it could be reread many times and there's a great deal of pleasure to be derived from it, just on the very simplest of levels. The plot was wonderful.
Thank you.
And the characterization I thought was, I think I mentioned this before, it's like, you know, a couple of like, Cagney and whatever, you
Hepburn.
Know. Hepburn? Yes, exactly, that's it. It was like an old duo from the past. They had that kind of charisma between each other. And I'm just guessing that this is somebody that you knew personally.
I can't go there.
I mean, not necessarily the person as represented in the book, but that you have known people that have been that charming.
Oh, that charming.
Yes.
Well, let me put it that way. the book, much of the dialogue and everything else, or a lot, or at least the personalities, were based upon pretty factual aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But much more I can't get into.
Okay. You mentioned a few minutes ago about remote viewing, and there's something I am just really, really curious about. I'm curious about the dark side of the moon and about Mars. Have you ever done any remote viewing in those areas?
No, I haven't.
Okay. But, would you?
But you have to ask why.
Why?
For me, it is not important.
Okay.
Now, it is important at one level, but I'm working on some other issues that, okay, let's assume there really is a face on Mars and that there are actually buildings on the moon. Good. Excellent. But you're going down the street and people are shooting at you. What good will that do you?
Mm.
So what I'm doing is working on the situation of things are going to get rather heavy rather quickly. I want to get my other aspects down. But that doesn't mean, this sounds like I'm putting it down. I'm not. There was a time where I'd definitely be interested in that. And if I had more time, that the political climate was a lot calmer and the Earth wasn't going to be hit with all of these things that are very imminent, I'd be looking at it. But you've got a caldera over here in California, in the Death Valley. I don't know if you know that or not.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. You have a 40,000 square mile aquifer, the largest in the western half of the world.
Mm.
And you have the water heating up very, very, very rapidly,
mm-hmm.
and that caldera is overdue. Then you've got the Yellowstone caldera, then you've got the magnetic aspects of the Earth starting to change, and that'll mean a flip, and then you've got ozone, and you've got all these things, and then you've got the current political crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of put the other things on the back burner right now.
Well, I can understand why. There's also the possibility of some kind of nuclear activation, isn't there? Where do you think? I've heard various things about the extraterrestrials are keeping a handle on that and not allowing any of those devices to be activated. But you know, what do you feel about that?
Well, the book gets into how the extraterrestrials have stepped in many, many times and thwarted a lot of nuclear potential problems. But an avatar is one who can do everything Jesus did and plus. And I knew one personally, and. He and I were sitting one time and we were talking about, you know, a nuclear bomb could go off, mm-hmm. or if it went off, he said, it would go off next to you and for you it would not exist. It would not be. And mm-hmm. so I'm simply telling the people who get the code and crack the code, and even if you don't think you cracked the code, certain things have been done that you will have it on a deeper level, trust me, so don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
A nuclear bomb can go off and it may bother a lot of people, but it won't bother you.
It won't even be an itch.
Well, it's like you're not changing dimensions, but you are living simultaneously in another dimension. While some people are living in that dimension, they're going to be affected, but you won't see it. You won't feel it. It'll be life as usual for you.
Hmm. Would we be aware of what was going on for other people as well?
No.
Okay. So in other words, it's almost as if we have our own reality.
It would be like two plays on a stage at the same time. Yeah. Actors from one don't know about the actors of the other.
Huh, interesting.
Because your world is going to be very, very nice, and they may have some problems with theirs.
Hmm, interesting.
But that's just a part of their spiritual growth. And it sounds very cold, and I don't mean it that way, because we all have our problems.
Well, yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the Ancient Order of Light, which is mentioned on your website?
Everybody belongs to this.
No.
Yeah, everybody belongs to this, but it's like we've allowed our library cards to lapse.
Okay.
And if you want to become, you know, reinstate this, you don't have to, it's not a church thing, it's not religious or anything else, but once every 3 months, it may be weekly later, you're going to, if you pass the test and get accepted, you're going to be allowed to partake in some group work for saving the planet.
Oh,
now,
great.
Now, getting the book is really an important part of that. You don't have to, but it would be very, very helpful. And there are two parts to the test. One is a written test, like 10 questions, and then there's a cosmic acceptance. Now, the strange thing is, you can blow all the questions on the written test and still get accepted.
Hmm.
Or you can get them all right and not be accepted, or whatever. It really is kind of where are you and could you be of advantage in saving the world. And so if you feel you have a desire to be of service, then let me give an example. We also have what is we're thinking of how to do this called the bearers of light.
Uh-huh.
Most of us in the audience feel that you were born for some great purpose. You may not know what it is, and the book will show you how to get in touch with what that is. But I'm giving you an example of one thing that you can do if you want. We are forming a mass of people to go out to the bookstores around the nation and just pop into the bookstores. And as you know, if they want to be like Bearer of Light, it's not a hokey name, but it's like what you're doing is you're coming into the bookstore and saying, "Do you have this book?" And if they say no, you say, "You know, I've heard the person, I either read the book or I know of it. You really might want it on here because there's going to be a lot of advertising and people will be coming and asking for it." And what we're going to do is put up on the website a couple little things that can be said when you go into the bookstore, but it will be an immense help not to sell books. This is not about selling books, making money, having power for my company or me or anything else. What it is about getting these books out to the bookstores so people can buy them so they can go out and learn the code and they can start saving the world, because the faster we get going, the faster this is going to be solved. And it will be solved, but it needs the help of these people. And so what we have is a situation where we'd like people to email us and join, you know, go to the website, that's www.itsmaya.com, and just ask if you can possibly be one who volunteers in your city to pop into the bookstores and ask them if they wouldn't mind carrying it, because it's a very, very important thing. And that in itself, helping the planet, I know it sounds like it's not much, but it would be so tremendous, so powerful, so important, I cannot tell you. And you'd be forming, you know, and doing a great service.
Well, I think most of us know that information is light. And, you know, sharing information is spreading the light.
Well, the Ancient Order of Light is something else. That's a different program where you're going to be working on, let's say, global warming or defusing the nuclear bombs that North Korea may want to point at us in the very near future, and so on and so forth, or stopping global famine or stopping the Ice Age and all of that. The Bearers of Light would be simply going into the bookstores. So it's two different things, but both are very necessary. So
One question that somebody was curious about is, with all of the things that are going on, is there any kind of action that you would advise to combat the negative control that, you know, that we've been talking about, or is this more of a spiritual vision quest?
When you read the code, the negativity, it may not seem like it in the beginning. In fact, it may seem like you even have more of it in your life, but the negativity will dissolve and go away. And the more you become better with it, the more it'll become less. So it's not necessarily a vision quest, but it sort of is. And all I can tell you is it gives you the methodology. But in the beginning, it may seem like, what have I stepped into? All sorts of negative problems are happening. It's because there's that aspect that really doesn't want you to do this code.
Right.
And then later on, you're going to find out that that aspect no longer exists. It dissolves.
Interesting. One of the things that you mentioned in the we were talking about the machinery, and there's a radionics machine that was mentioned. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the radionics. You see, the book is for any level where you are spiritually. Some people can use prayer. Some people say, "Well, it doesn't really work for me." Here's an actual mechanical device that you can use to send a prayer out to somebody on the other side of the world or right next to you, and do healing, do all sorts of things. In fact, I've even seen it used for an exorcism. Somebody put a picture of a person that was possessed in the machine, and the picture just started hopping all over the place. Really amazing, because this is a very, very powerful thing. But it's like using crystals or the tarot cards or all of these very, very useful things like astrology, numerology, very powerful things. But when you get the code, you go, I don't need that. I have, for instance, this other radio program talks about time travel quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And a gentleman by the name of John Teeter using this mechanical device.
Oh,
great.
Yes.
Maybe. I mean, I haven't tried to research and see if he exists or doesn't exist or whatever.
Well, it's a big question.
Well, you know, but you don't need a mechanical device to do that.
Right.
If you teleport from point A to point B, you've actually changed time and you've done time travel. Now you just extend a little farther to yesterday or to tomorrow, and you've done that too. You know, so
and watch out for the langoliers.
Oh, you remember that one, do you?
Yes, I just watched it.
One thing I'd like to ask people, if I might, Lance, this book, this message, is so important to the world, and not only to this world, but to the other dimensions, because it's kind of a time ripple quantum physics scenario, that if any of you can volunteer a way or think of a way to take this book nationally or internationally, the Da Vinci Code, when it went out, it had 1 year before it went out. We had to jump in and go out because of certain political aspects and climate aspects were happening. We didn't have the 1 year to build up the buzz. So if you know of people that need this book, if you know of radio stations, if you know of anything, don't hesitate. And when you email, it's info@carldonkert.com. You can get it from just the www. It's Maya website. Write to me personally, Dane. D-A-N-E. Don't even have to put Alexander. Just write to me, Dane, and say, I have this idea. I will get back to you personally.
Yes, and believe me, people, he will do that because, you know, I have a friend that he's talked to, and she was just thrilled to be, you know, just chatting with him, you know, over through emails and various other things. He's, you know, you really are, what's that word, WYSIWYG? What you see is what you get.
Well,
you know, you're a really nice guy.
Well, I'm just very, very average, and this is why I want to impress upon everybody that anybody can do these things, and greater. You know, they're not mysterious. You just may have to dig a little bit once you get the code, but you're going to do it. Everybody can do it, and this world will be saved. So just because the book starts out like all sorts of problems are happening, that's true. Don't turn away. Look at it straight in the face, but know that you are capable of doing every miracle that you can conceive and more. In fact, this one avatar that I know of, I haven't met this person, but I know that this person was everything I've said plus, could do all of these things and yet said, with all that I know and all I can do, I have just begun to touch the hem of the garment.
Wow.
So how much is beyond? We don't know.
Wow. What do you think is holding us all back so? I mean, it seems just a few chosen people get to reach that kind of level, and then they're gone. What do you think is the biggest thing that keeps us that holds us back from manifesting these things?
Once you go to a particular level, you no longer can stay in this vibrational rate. In fact, this person that I know of that could do it, a friend of mine, he was given, they appeared before him and said, now you can ascend if you want to. And he said, I'd like to stay back and teach the method. And so he did, and then later on passed on.
Huh.
But what holds you back is part of the code, but I will tell you, and it's that chapter on pre-Genesis. And if you will read the chapter on pre-Genesis, it'll tell you exactly what holds you back. And we've made it manifest, and we've given it power, and its power is real until it's dissolved. And that's part of the problem. But everybody can do it.
Well, I guess we just have to find out how to tap into that. And this is definitely a solution. And also, don't forget Christmas is coming up. This is a perfect time to get somebody a book instead of a sweater or, you know, an Xbox or something like that. Give them a great book to read and change their lives. So, you know, Dane, we're almost out of time. Do you have any last words or famous last words? Do you have any more that you would like to share with our audience before we say goodbye to you tonight?
The primary thing that I would say is this is not a book. It is a very deep, deep code, which is a fun read. And yet it's a code that each and every single one of you, if you don't crack it today, at some point in time in existence, next year, next month, many, many lifetimes in the future, you're going to crack it, but you might as well get started on it now because it'll open up an entire different realm to you.
Wonderful. And I would like to thank you for being on the show tonight again. Dana, I had a great time with you again. You're so easy to talk to and so informative, and, you know, I'm just really thrilled to have you back. And I encourage everybody to get the book. And your site is www.itsmaya.com, correct?
That is right.
Okay. And the book, of course, is called Maya. Very simple, easy to remember, Maya. Not Yora, Maya. And, you know, I have to tell you, I was so disturbed about reading the newspaper recently that I decided to get all my news from watching South Park.
Oh, gosh, no.
So with that jolly note, thank you again, Dane, for being my guest. And everybody, go out and get his book. It is a must. And be sure and stay tuned for another exciting show, Otherwhere, with my friend Liz Miller. She is fabulous. So thank you again, Dane, for being with us.
I'm honored.
Oh, very good. And until next week, good night, everybody.